Reinhardt Glass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for being here today. You know, I get all riled up because just before this program is Nature Bat's Last, and I love their theme song. I just, like, start rocking to it, and then we move into our show with a very different kind of feeling. And anyway, I don't know if you listened to that show. I don't have an opportunity to, other than the last bits of it before this program comes on, but I definitely enjoy it, especially the song. Okay, here we are. We're in January, and are you sticking with your resolutions? I hope so. Have you made any resolutions? Yeah. Well, anything I can do to help, let me know. I'm at info@realmeals.org, and if you need any inspiration or tip or two, I'm here for you, especially if it has to do with eating more plants, because that's what I'm all about. That's what my nonprofit, Responsible Eating and Living, is all about, and we're always trying to come up with new delicious ideas for you to make it easier. I want to bring on my guest. She's been on the program before, Donna Zeifinger. She's a seasoned world traveler who founded Green Earth Travel, and we're going to maybe take a trip today. Hi, Donna. How are you?
Good. How are you? Yay. I'm back.
Yay.
On.
Yeah. So the last time we spoke, it was maybe springtime last year.
Yes.
And you were planning some adventures in Italy.
Yes.
And they how did it go?
It was fabulous. We had a lot of we had several great group leaders. We had we had Fran Costigan, who came with us and 1 week, and then we had Miyoko Shinner, who's coming back with us this year as well. Matt Frazier and who else? Dr. Ruby Lathan, and then Carol and Scott Hamilton. They all had a week where they, you know, let us, you know, they did, led us around, or we led them around, but they did, like, cooking classes and discussions, and Jasmine and Marianne were there as well. I think you know them, so the Hen House girls. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun, and it was such a beautiful country, and I will tell you now, there's a new favorite vegan travel place for me, and that's Italy.
Wow. Well, you've been a vegan for, I think, over 30 years.
Yikes, yes.
Yes, 30 years plus, and you've done a lot of traveling. Did you learn anything new about traveling this past year in Italy?
Well, I didn't know that how vegan-friendly it was. I didn't realize why it was so vegan-friendly, and the reason was, in southern Italy especially, the people many years ago were not wealthy enough to afford meat and cheeses, so they had to be creative with what they had. Mm-hmm. And they are very creative. And I didn't know you could get gelato. I've never had gelato before, and it was amazing.
And what was it made from?
I think it was soy. I don't know. I'd have to ask, but I think it was soy. it was just amazing.
Excellent. Okay, so you're going back, but you're going to different locations this year.
Well, we're going back to the Amalfi Coast in July, so that one's still going. In fact, Juliana Heaver is going to be our group leader in the July trip, and then Miyoko is coming back in the fall with us to go to Puglia and Matera. And that is like the olive, and yeah, that's going to be a very cooking-intensive kind of trip, but I can't wait because I like have to hoard her cheeses whenever I can.
Do people get to cook while they're there?
Yes.
Or learn about cooking?
Yes, on both trips you can. I think Miyoko's will be a little more intensive with that, but they get to cook. It's hands-on if they want. They don't have to if they don't want to, because I am not a cook. I just like to eat what everyone else is cooking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what kinds of foods did you eat when you were there that you're probably going to have something similar this year?
Well, you know, with Fran's trip, which, by the way, we're looking into some things. Sicily might be on the horizon as well. But I ate a lot of chocolate and a lot of gelato. You know, and I had some wonderful pasta dishes, a lot of, you know, veggie dishes. There was just a lot of really, you know, a lot of quinoa and just really good healthy stuff. And I liked the fact that I could drink and not get hungover because the wines don't have the sulfur in it, I guess is what it is. So you don't get as much, you know, you can drink more and not get a headache. Sulfites, excuse me, not sulfur.
Right, that's a different story.
Sulfites. So
interesting.
Yeah, I love their wines there, and I'm not a big drinker.
Okay. Now, the places that you want aren't normally vegan, are they?
I'm sorry, say that again?
The places where you went to for lodging and for most of the meals weren't normally vegan.
No, we had rented a villa last year, and so we were able to do all the cooking, or Tierno Tours was doing all the cooking, so the dinners and such. Mm-hmm. And the first couple nights, we're going to be staying in and around the Amalfi Coast. We'll be in Sorrento in a hotel, so it won't be, you'll be able to go out to eat if you want for a couple nights, a couple days anyway. There'll be one dinner. That'll be in Sorrento, but then the rest of the time is going to be in a villa in the Cilento Coast, and Tierno Tours will be doing the cooking as well.
And who is that?
Tierno Tours is the tour operator, and I have kind of partnered up with them or working with them we have a company named Vegano. It's called Vegano Italiano. And we'll be doing other tours as well, not just Italy.
Mm. Yeah. What is in there?
I don't know. There could be a lot. There's a lot of, we're just brewing with a lot of things, you know, because there's a lot of excitement. I mean, I would like to see France. That would be my, you know, my next trip, but we'll see what happens. There is another company I've started working with called Vegan River Cruises, and they do river cruising in Europe, and it's all vegan. They charter the whole boat out. So a lot of exciting things happening.
Very nice. Well, I recommend France. I lived there as a vegan in the early 90s and never went hungry.
Really? Because it was very hard when I went there. there was a gentleman who wrote, I don't know if you know who Alex Bork is. He writes all these vegan travel books, vegan travel guides. And one of the first things he would say to you is, you know, when they look at your vegan passport in France, they would turn you away.
Oh, well, it definitely helps to speak the language. And I speak French fluently. And the other thing was to really stay away from Paris. But things have changed tremendously since I've been there. I mean, it's been like 15 years and or more, 20,
oh, it's,
25
yeah.
since I've been there, and it's incredible. But what I found in, just as you were mentioning, in Italy with some of the traditional foods, in the south of France especially, they have many dishes that are vegetable-based with olive oil, no butter, no cheese, and one nice thing that I've always liked about France is that if you have a name for a dish, you know how it's going to be made. There's no variation on a theme. If you have ratatouille, you know what's in it.
Right, exactly.
They're not going to stick chicken broth in there. It's just not done.
Right. I'm going to backtrack a little bit. Paris has really come around. I mean, they even have a vegan Paris
Absolutely.
Day. So
yes.
It's really changed a lot.
Yeah, well, after I left, I went back for one of the first vegan pride parades in Paris, and I was just like, oh my goodness, this is heavenly.
Right.
Yeah. So things are changing. That's great, because I think Europe is a natural place for lots of vegan activity. It just makes sense all over.
Oh, it does.
It makes sense all around the world, of course, but why not in areas that are known for their culinary expertise to just get their vegan thing on already.
Right. Well, you know, there's an area that, and there is another area that I really want to check out. I was just looking at Happy Cow, Germany, and Berlin in particular. I was looking at their list, and they have 245 vegan and vegan-friendly places to go to in Berlin alone.
Wow. Yeah.
So I think out of that, there was like...
Are we hearing me? I'm not sure if I'm on. Just tell me I am, and I'll keep going. Okay. Well, it looks like we lost Donna. All right. I was hearing this hum before, and I guess that hum came part with Donna's line, and I thought that I was lost too. But I'm not lost. And maybe, Donna, whenever you come back, let us know. So we were talking about Europe and Germany in particular, and I feel that I really need to get back to Europe because so many wonderful things have happened. And we've had a number of different German animal rights activists on this particular show, and it's always been exciting to hear what's going on. I think Germany is a very progressive place. They're very progressive when it comes to human rights, animal rights, and sustainability. I'm not talking about the entire population. I'm just talking about pockets of activism that are going on. It's very encouraging. And as a result, you have people that are interested in supporting restaurants and markets. Germany has the first all-vegan supermarket. And it sounds like they're going to be coming to the United States as well. Donna, you're back.
Yes, I am.
What happened?
Yes. I don't know. I have no idea. It could be my internet. I know it's crazy. But anyway, I was listening
cyberspace.
To you talk about Berlin.
Yeah, I was talking about Germany and how progressive they are on so many levels. I've talked to a number of animal rights activists on this program, and they keep telling us all of the things that are going on, vegan supermarkets, restaurants, all kinds of wonderful food products. So that's an interesting place to go, definitely.
I went there as one of my first trips as a travel agent in the mid-'80s, I think it was, with my mother, and we found one vegetarian, I don't even think it was vegan, restaurant, and it was in Munich. And there was like nothing. Basically, at that time, I was eating at Chinese restaurants a lot when we were traveling around. We were laughing about it. We were eating Chinese food in Germany. But so it's really, really changed, and it's very exciting what's going on there. Very excited to hear about Germany being as vegan friendly as it is. I'm going to have to get back there soon. Okay, everybody, I'm back. I'm Karen Hartglass, and sorry about that. We're having some serious cyberspace problem. Don, are you with me?
I am. I am with you.
Okay. It's either Skype or cyberspace, or somebody doesn't want us talking about vegan travel.
That's because they're all jealous. That's right. There is also a new
talk
area.
About Berlin. You were talking about Berlin when I last heard from you.
Yeah, I don't know where I left off or where I got cut off, but there's over 245 vegan and vegan-friendly restaurants in that area that I was looking at on Happy Cow. And I think out of that, there's like 50 or 45 vegan restaurants alone and probably like 100 that are vegetarian. And that's just, that's crazy.
It is crazy. It's fabulous. So you were saying, I missed... you said that a long time ago, maybe in the 80s, you went to Munich and you went to one vegetarian restaurant. Do you remember what it was called? Because I was kept talking about Prince Fishkin, and I don't know who was listening when I was talking about that Munich restaurant.
I don't know. It was like some Africans. I don't know. It was something different, you know. And
okay.
It took I can look it up, but I can't. Of course, somebody's trying to call me in right now. But I don't remember the name of it. I'd have to ask my mother. She might know.
Well, it's very different now, and that's what's wonderful.
It's very different. You don't have to eat Chinese food the whole time like I did.
And, you know, even Chinese food, if you're not speaking the language, you don't know how clean it's going to be.
Right, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
So there is another area that I just really started looking into, and there's a company I started working with recently, and it's Peru, which is South America. So that's, yeah, there's a company called Veggie Peru that I started working with, and I hope to work with them a lot more in the future. So all vegan Peru, how about that?
Yeah, there are vegans everywhere.
We can't get away.
There are vegans everywhere doing wonderful things, and we need to find them and we need to connect. And I think if we go to other places and discover more people who think like we do, that's only going to be good for moving the planet forward.
Yeah. And I'm starting to do some local stuff again. I used to do a local trip every year, which people loved, but I didn't have the time for it in the past year or two, and I'm getting back into it. We're going to do, I live in the Maryland, D.C. area, so the Potomac River is right there. So we used to partner up with the D.C. Vegetarian Society and do a vegan rafting trip, and it looks like we're going to be doing that again. It's just a day trip, but it's so much fun. Yeah, it's a lot of fun to do that. So, yeah, there's a lot of exciting things going on.
But, you know, there's a lot of fun things going on, but I'm never, it never ceases to amaze me how some people still are clueless. And I got an email today, just like an hour ago, from a listener, and she wanted to vent. And she knew that I'd be a good place to send her frustration to. So she was looking for a spa to go to, because she normally goes, she lives in Texas and normally goes to Lake Austin Spa. And she thought she would try something new. And she checked out a place in California and had this conversation that I can't believe people are still having, where she said, "I'm vegan. Are you able to accommodate that?" And the person on the line said, "Yes, do you eat yogurt and eggs?" Or you eat yogurt and eggs, right? And then said, "Yeah, but if you're going to be working out a lot, you're going to need protein." Like, wait a minute, this is California. Haven't you gotten the
message?
Yeah, I was
going to say, this is California. I would
and
say, if you're not willing to work with your travel agent, who usually works with you on this kind of stuff, you need to speak to the chef directly. That's what I do, you know. Because the res agents don't know what they're, you know, they don't know. I shouldn't say that. A lot of them do know, but a lot of them don't know.
I'm just surprised that the spas still don't know, that's all.
Yeah, no, a spa especially, you would think.
A spa is usually a groovy place that is more health conscious than other places, and you'd think they would have heard of the word vegan.
But, yeah, they don't understand it.
One of now that I'm on the subject of spas, I don't know if you've seen this or if you look into it, but it's been a while since I've had a massage. But when I would go, some places used massage products that weren't vegan, like an oil with lanolin in it, which
right.
I didn't want on my body.
I haven't seen lanolin oil in massage. That's weird. Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
I'm sure it's still there. It's probably at that place in California that.
There you go.
My friend just checked into. Yeah. Okay. Well,
yeah. You have to ask.
You
do have to ask.
That's the thing. You can't be shy.
Can't be. Yeah. And ask them to look at the product, and they usually will show you if they're, you know, if they have any inkling of what you're about.
For those of you who are wondering, lanolin is a sheep product. It comes from the oil on the what do you call it? It's not fur, but on the fluffy, what is that called? Their fur.
The undercoat?
Oh, my goodness. I don't know what it's called. But on their coat. Yeah. Anyway, they create an oil, and it's on their skin and their coat, and we harvest that. Probably not in the most loving way, and put it in bottles. And it's in a lot of interesting products. And I don't like it. No, I don't either. I'm trying to think if there's any other products offhand that would be in oils that would make it non-vegan. But most of the spas, especially when you go to the higher-end spas like Canyon Ranch, and maybe somebody can prove me wrong, but all these higher-end spas typically have eco-friendly and vegan products.
Mm-hmm.
You just really have to check, though, beforehand, or bring your own. That's the other
option. Your own. I do that a lot when I go to a hair salon. I bring my own products.
Right.
And I want to empower people, because the world is only going to change when we make people aware of things that aren't quite right. And we don't have to do it in an argumentative or confrontational way. It can always be done in a polite manner, requesting to have products that are more compassionate and vegan.
Yeah, I actually used to take group people out to Best Friends Animal Sanctuary, and afterwards we went to it's kind of a spa-ish type of place out in Zion National Park, and because mm-hmm. I was taking so many people that were vegan or vegetarian there, they actually they put permanently on their menu a tofu scramble. So they would have a vegan
smart option
for, yeah. Yeah, it is smart. You know, they realize there is a need for it. So the more it's asked for, the more they're going to do it.
Right.
Don't be shy. I'm not.
Don't be shy. Thank you for not being shy and for finding places that people can travel comfortably to and discover wonderful things and eat wonderfully, too. Anything else we need to know about you and Green Earth Travel and where you'll be going?
Well, as I said, we're going to Italy in July 2nd through the 9th with Juliana Hever and then Miyoko Shinner in the end of September, September 24th through the October 1st. And we would love to have you guys out there with us.
And where can people find out about it?
Well, you can go onto my website at greenearthtravel.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be putting up I'm updating my website in the next month or so. It's going to be beautiful. But in the meantime, you have to deal with my ugly old website. I'll be putting up the cruise as well as the vegan rafting trip and hopefully Peru in the next couple months. So
very nice. Well, updating websites, that's always a fun project.
Yes. Yes.
And you always have to keep updating because the cyber world is always changing.
I'm looking for interns.
Yeah, for help.
For help. I'm always looking for help.
Yeah.
So anyway, but it'll be a beautiful website once it's done. I'm really happy with it so far.
Okay, well, looking forward to that destination.
And Karen, you should come with us.
Oh, yes, well, maybe.
There you go.
About that. Okay, well, Donna, thank you for taking us on a little journey around the world of vegan possibilities.
Anytime.
I look forward to learning more about it all on your new site, GreenEarthTravel.com.
Yes.
Great.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Well, bye-bye. That was Donna Zeifinger, founder of Green Earth Travel. So if you're interested in that, those luscious-sounding trips, go to GreenEarthTravel.com. Okay. Let's continue, shall we? All right. I'm sorry about all of that stuff that went on earlier with the Skype coming in and out. And fortunately, I have different means of communicating, so I'm on my cell phone right now. Very good. I wanted to talk today about water. I've had a number of listeners mention things about water and want more information about water, and we've talked about water before. I like to say that food, to me, it's all about food, but next to food, actually, more important than food, we need to breathe,
And when we stop breathing, the game's over. You cannot do it without breathing. And then the second most important thing is water. And we need water more than food, because if you're out without, you can go much longer without food than you can without water. So water is really important. There has been a couple of items in the news that have been very disturbing about water. So I wanted to review them first and then talk about what we might do about it. Maybe, I'm sure you've heard about what's going on in Flint, Michigan, a very, very sad story about how a couple of years ago, the state decided to save money, and they switched the Flint's water supply from Lake Huron, and they were paying for the city of Detroit there for that water, and they switched it to Flint River, and apparently that river was known by everyone for its filth, and no one really realized that that's where their water was coming from. And now it's come to a head, unfortunately, and people have been drinking this water apparently for over 18 months, and now they're being given filters and they're being given bottled water. People are wondering what kind of damage it's done to children who are more affected by toxins in the water than adults, but it's affected everyone. Apparently, the water in the Flint River is highly corrosive, and it contained lots of iron. People saw that their water was brown. But worse than the iron, apparently, was the lead that was in this water. And people have been drinking, unfortunately, high levels of lead. And this is here in the United States, and it just seems so hard to believe. To avoid this problem, they could have added an agent that cost them a mere $100 a day to avoid about 90% of the problems of using Flint's water. Okay, so that's Flint, and I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about it. The other story that came up in the news recently was a phenomenal article in New York Times Magazine called "The Lawyer Who Became DuPont's Worst Nightmare." And this is a story that came out this week, January 6th, and it covers several decades. I think this problem actually started in the 80s, and it's taken so long to follow this through and find out what's really going on. But apparently some 66 acres were sold by a couple to DuPont back in the early 80s, and they wanted to use this land for landfill for waste from its factory. And what happened was they ended up polluting the water severely. And it's a very, very compelling story. I don't want to go into all of it, but I'll touch on some of the items that were spoken about. So this one lawyer who normally would take on cases that supported corporations, he found himself on the other side and was supporting some couple that had problem with the water and wanted to sue DuPont as a result for their negligence. And the lawyer took on the case. They go into his history and what he was all about and why he did this. And he ultimately filed a federal suit against DuPont in the summer of 1999 in West Virginia. And lots of different things happened. And he won his suits. And then he wanted to take it further because originally it was about the water affecting some animals that were drinking out of the river. And then it turned into all these different people who were affected by the water. And the settlement that they got involved, actually, in the long run, testing thousands of people who might have been affected by the pollution in the water. Now, the particular item that was in the water that came from DuPont was something known as PFOA, perfluorooctanoic acid. It's also known as C8, and it's used for the manufacturing of Teflon. And I'm sure many of you know that Teflon, that nonstick coating that we all loved decades ago, we discovered is not a healthy item to have on pots, and it has since been phased out of products. But in the meanwhile, in the decades that Teflon was being made, this particular PFOA was being dumped into the water, and DuPont had instructions, according to this article, that it specified that this PFOA was not to be flushed into surface water or sewers. But then over the decades that followed, they did pump hundreds of thousands of pounds of PFOA powder into the Ohio River. And the article goes into, it's very long and definitely worth reading. And there isn't exactly a happy ending. There was a class action suit that this lawyer brought, and he won, but it takes a really long time to settle a lot of these cases. So why am I bringing up these different issues? These are two issues that came out recently in the media about our water supply and how they have affected different people in different regions. And unfortunately, things like this do happen all the time, and some of them don't get the media press that these particular two instances got. Some of them may not be as severe, and some of them we just never even know. I offered a webinar last year. I was supporting it by a company called Aquany, and they did a webinar on why you want to purify your water. And one of the things that was covered was the fact that there are many, many cases throughout the United States of water being contaminated and people not knowing about it. So sometimes there's a leak, it gets cleaned up, and everybody forgets about it. And sometimes it can be more complicated than that. So what I wanted to talk about is how do we protect ourselves from this? And you may know I am very, very passionate about purifying water because I believe water is essential. We know it is, and we want it to be clean. So what do? Well, there are a number of things that we can do. So the first thing is, let's talk about bottled water, shall we? Because I don't think bottled water is a solution. Now, it's a solution in emergencies, and in this case, for Flint, Michigan, it's a decent solution. But bottled water comes with so many other issues. It takes a tremendous amount of energy that gets wasted when we bottle water. In addition, it takes lots and lots more water to put water in bottles. So in areas that are concerned about drought, bottling water is really not a good solution. It's very, very wasteful. Even if you're not concerned about droughts, it's a big waste of water to bottle water. And a lot of people like bottled water because they believe it's cleaner, that it's better for them, that it tastes better than tap water. And some bottled water indeed does taste better than tap water, but there have been many studies that have shown that the cleanliness of bottled water is not guaranteed, and there are different makes that have different issues. It's not guaranteed. You don't know what's in your bottled water. Water bottled in glass is a better choice than plastic because plastic can degrade, and the products from the plastic can leach into your water, and then you drink that too. So there's lots of reasons that drinking bottled water is not a good idea. And I'll admit I drink bottled water on occasion, but I really work very hard to avoid it at all costs. I have my own glass bottles here, take-me bottles that are that have a rubber coating around them so that if I drop them, they don't break. And I fill them all the time with water when I'm going somewhere. Some people might say, oh, they're so heavy. But I think it's really worth it to have clean water that's not in plastic, that's not environmentally friendly. Then you have to recycle these bottles after they've been made. It's a disaster. Okay, so that's bottled water. you're not guaranteed that it's any cleaner, and it's an environmental nightmare, right? Okay. So most of us have access to tap water, and tap water is a beautiful thing. We are very lucky to live in a society where we can turn on a faucet and have water. There are places all over the world that do not have this luxury. I am very, very, very grateful for tap water, no question about it. And I use tap water. The thing is, I clean it. I purify it to use it. And there are lots of different ways to purify your water. And I wanted to talk about some of them. Now, some people think that boiling their water is a good thing to do. And if you're doing it to get rid of some bacteria, that might be okay. But as far as toxic chemicals in the water, all you're doing is concentrating them. When you boil water, water evaporates off the surface. And what you do is concentrating everything else in the remaining water. So boiling water is really not a good idea for purifying water. Now, something very close to that, distillation, is an excellent way to clean water. I'm a big proponent of distillation, and I distill my water here at home every day. So there are different forms, different ways to filter your water. There's also something called reverse osmosis, and there's distillation. And I believe that reverse osmosis and distillation are probably the best choices. And even better is to do them in conjunction with some sort of carbon filtration. The thing that you have to decide if you want to purify your water is what makes the most sense to you. The thing about reverse osmosis that I don't like is that every time you use it, the membrane that's used in reverse osmosis will be collecting contaminants and keeping and separating them from the water that you're going to be drinking, and it collects over time. And there are lots of systems that clean the residue that's collecting, but still, over time, it becomes less and less efficient. So you have these specs on your appliance on how well it purifies water, and those specs are only accurate the first time you use your reverse osmosis appliance or any kind of filtration system. And it degrades over time. With distillation, that's not true. Distillation is the same every time. And that's what I love about distillation. And that's why I use a distiller. I filter my tap water through an under-sink charcoal-based filtration system, and then I distill my water after that. I've heard some comments that reverse osmosis has advantages over distillation, and distillation has its advantages over reverse osmosis. And again, it's something that you have to decide what's right for you if you're looking into one or the other. But I really believe that it is very important to use tap water and filter that water. So there's a range, like any product, there are a range of systems that you can get. And I have a personal favorite for distillers, and you can go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and scroll down on the right side and see the one that I personally like and recommend. I believe what I like most about this particular company that I recommend is that they are based in the United States. A lot of these other distiller machines are made in China, and I like to buy as locally as I possibly can. I also think that this particular distillation company, Aquanee, that I like a lot, is very, very reputable. Now, there's a lot of questions about distilled water or filtered water with reverse osmosis versus minerals in the water, because these methods remove minerals. And this is something that always amuses me, because the amount of minerals that come in mineral water is, like, so negligible. Tiny, teeny, tiny amounts of minerals. And we need minerals, but we get minerals from a whole plant-based diet, fruits and vegetables, raw nuts and seeds. We get minerals from a healthy diet. And I would not recommend looking for mineral water, or even sea salt, for that matter, for the minerals that you need in your diet. They both come with trace minerals, and it's not the place to look for. Or even, it's not even necessary to add minerals back into the water. Some people talk about how the pH of these treated water in distillation, for example, is too acidic. And it really is not a problem. But if you want, there was one study. I read about it from Dr. Michael Greger on nutritionfacts.org, where he saw that he reported a study that was done where people that added baking soda to their water, and it was just a tiny little amount. I think it was like 3/4 teaspoon of baking soda to a liter of plain tap water. They had great results in reducing cholesterol. There is a link that has to do with eating acidic foods like meat and high processed food that leads to your arteries being clogged and coated and causing higher cholesterol. And so this seems to be like a similar scenario, that more alkaline water can reduce cholesterol. Aside from that, there really seems to be no problem in drinking this water. But if you wanted to, you could add a little baking soda to your tap water. I thought about it. I haven't done it. And I can't report on that at all. Let's see what I've got here on the rest about water. It's, I just want to say that it's intuitive. We have, especially here in New York City, the pipes have been around for a long time, and pipes degrade. There's all kinds of things that go through the pipelines when the water's coming through. I think our tap water system is phenomenal, and even if the source is pristine, the fact that it has to travel so long through so many different pipes, the water can't help but pick stuff up. And add to that that we add chlorine products and fluoride products to our water. I don't want to drink those things. I guess I'm glad they're there in order to remove different kinds of bacteria, but I don't want to drink them. Now, another thing, not just when it comes to drinking water, but when you're showering with water or bathing with water, I use a filter on my bath water. I like to bathe. I'm not a big shower person, but I also am aware of filters for shower heads, and I really think it's a good idea to filter bath water. You know, our skin is the largest organ that we have. And when we shower or when we bathe or when we swim, some of that water will find its way into our bodies. And not as much as if we drink, of course, because our skin is designed to keep things out. But things can find their way in. And the cleaner the water is that we cleanse ourselves with, the better. I remember talking to Charlotte Gerson, who was the daughter of the doctor that came up with the Gerson therapy, which is a juicing method in order to heal people from serious disease. And one of the things she talked about was, if you're going through a healing crisis, to avoid bathing in water that has chlorine and fluoride in it. And she recommended just cleansing yourself. You could have, like they did in the old-fashioned days, either pour purified water, distilled water, into the sink, and then with a cloth you can bathe that way without requiring a tremendous amount of water. It's not as comforting as taking a bath, and it's not as invigorating as taking a shower, but for some people who really want to stay clean and avoid toxins, that might be the best way to go. I remember, speaking of DuPont before, I remember I worked for DuPont as an engineer back in 1980 to 1982, and I lived in Delaware. And the thing that I can never forget was the water that came out of my tap, came out of my showerhead in my little apartment, was so horrible to smell. I'll never forget that smell. I'll never forget that taste. And, you know, back then I wasn't as plugged in into the alternative health community, and I don't know that we had as many options at that time. I didn't know what to do. I just drank it. I just drank more tea. I covered up the taste. It was harder when with taking a shower, of course, to cover up that taste or that smell, but it was horrible. And I wonder myself today, what was in it? I don't know. And I hope that it's not there today, because it was really offensive. And I imagine if it smelled bad, it couldn't have been too good for anybody. Okay. So before we go, I had a few more things I wanted to talk about that isn't water related. For example, I just came upon an article today that I thought was really fun to read, and I thought was really positive. So a friend of mine, Jim Corcoran, had an article. He didn't even know that it was published today when I shared it on my Facebook page, which I thought was really amusing. But he wrote an inspiring article in the Dow News, and it's about how more people are accommodating and become accustomed to the vegan diet and how vegan offerings are everywhere. And I just wanted to highlight a few of them. For example, in fast food restaurants like Taco Bell, they now have 26 vegan certified menu items. Is that amazing? 26. Subway has vegan sandwiches available at 1,000 locations and more to come. Wendy's has a black bean burger. Come on, this is awesome. All 7-Eleven store sandwiches are made with vegan mayo. That's Hampton Foods, just mayo. We've talked about that company a number of times, and 7-Eleven uses their vegan mayo. And so many more things. IKEA, the furniture store, they've introduced vegan meatless meatballs at all stores. Can you say meatless meatballs? And it's like everywhere. GQ, months earlier in the year, named a vegan burger here in New York City, actually, the Superiority Burger, the best burger of the year. And one of my favorite beers, Guinness Stout, we thought it was vegan, but then we learned it wasn't vegan, and then everybody got outraged and let them know, and now they've decided to go all vegan. And I just recently read that Ben & Jerry's is making vegan ice cream line. Ben & Jerry's, a vegan ice cream line. This is awesome. And TCBY is rolling out their second vegan frozen yogurt flavor nationwide. This is really exciting. And, of course, there are lots of people that we're hearing about that are going vegan for lots of different reasons. We have the latest president of the American College of Cardiology, Tim Williams, MD, vegan, Mr. Universe 2014, Barney Duplessis, went vegan for muscle building benefits. I mean, this is awesome. And there are a few more here. Where did it go? Here it is. All right. The ex-McDonald's CEO joined the vegan company Beyond Meat. And then we have celebrities like Stevie Wonder, vegan, Bono, vegan, Liam Hemsworth, vegan, Miley Cyrus, vegan. This is absolutely wonderful. So I'd like to say we're winning We are making strides. We are making headway, and it's all good. So if you've got a resolution this year to go vegan, if you're not there yet already, I say yay to you, and let me know how I can help at info@realmeals.org. info@realmeals.org. That's really good news. Some not so good news is the 2015 dietary guidelines. We talked about them last year. I was so excited when the original science and the original study and recommendations came out. And sure enough, our politicians got involved. And as Dr. David Katz writes in his very excellent article, 2015 Dietary Guidelines, A Plateful of Politics, the guidelines are a national embarrassment. And what do you do about it? The unfortunate thing is that a lot of government organizations and schools base the foods that they're going to serve on these dietary guidelines. Now, we have control of the food that we choose to buy in most cases in our homes, and I hope that you choose organic, whole foods, minimally processed plant foods. One of the annoying things, really annoying things about the 2015 dietary guidelines, what was recommended was to include the concept of sustainability. And there were many people that said, you know, how can you link the environment with food? And then why do we need to talk about sustainability when it comes to food? And these people really have their head in the sand. We know, we all know, I know that you know that our food system is very unsustainable, and we need to talk about sustainability when we're talking about food. And they didn't want to bring it up because, well, there are companies that have a lot of power, a lot of lobbyists, and they know that if we start talking about how unsustainable meat production is, how unsustainable dairy production is, how unsustainable egg production is, how unsustainable, et cetera, animal products are, that will affect their bottom line. And yes, it will, but it will make us healthier. It will make our planet cleaner, and we'll be a lot kinder to the species that currently we treat so horribly to make something that is considered food. And the 2015 dietary guidelines are actually, there's some hypocrisy involved, because many people said that, why are we including sustainability? What does sustainability have in food? And yet they talked that physical activity is recommended. And what does physical activity have to do with food? So if sustainability isn't related to food, physical activity shouldn't be either. They both shouldn't be in the guidelines. But I think they both should be. But unfortunately, only physical activity recommendations made it, and not sustainability. There's a lot more that's wrong, unfortunately, with the 2015 guidelines, and I really recommend reviewing this article by Dr. David Katz, 2015 Dietary Guidelines, A Plate Full of Politics, and so you can read for yourself, indeed, what went wrong. Okay, I just got like a minute or two left, and I wanted to bring you over to Responsible Eating and Living. That's where I live, and talk about some really great food that we prepared this week and included some recipes for you. One recipe, we have a fun name for it. I didn't have a backyard to dig a fire pit to cook my vegetables, so I baked them in our oven instead. That's the name of one recipe. Actually, it's a verdure al forno, or baked, oven-baked vegetables. And if you look at the picture on our website for this, you're going to want to lick the screen. I know I do right now. But it's such an easy recipe and really stunning to put all these wonderful vegetables together and bake them in the oven with the seasonings that we recommend for you. We actually use something called za'atar. Are you familiar with that? It's a Middle Eastern spice. And then there's a condiment of the same name, which is a mix of thyme, oregano, marjoram, toasted sesame seeds, something called sumac, and salt. and it's a wonderful seasoning mix, and that's what's in our oven-baked vegetables. And another recipe I wanted to point out, because it is just amazing, is this pudding recipe. It's really easy. Gary mentioned that he thought we should try making it, and we did. I've never had the, quote, real version, but we made a veganized version of it, and it's just a creamy, rich vanilla pudding that's flavored with, traditionally it's flavored with rum and brandy, and we didn't have rum or brandy. We used bourbon and vermouth, and the result was phenomenal, and I highly recommend it. It's elegant, it's delicious, and it'll make you happy. Okay? Made me happy. I wish I had some more. Anyway, thanks for joining me today on It's All About Food, and I'll be back next week, and we'll be talking to, oh, it's so exciting. We're going to be talking about the Herbivore Butcher, a new plant-based butcher store. So it's not really a butcher store, but they're selling plant-based meats. It's really exciting, and I can't wait to talk to them. That's next week. So join me. Until then, have a delicious week.